Good afternoon to all of you. Why don't you get one, please? You're a little out of water, and my all of a sudden have birthed the cough. Talking about birthing, never done it. But I want to read to you some comparisons that illustrate the relationship between children and their mother. Some things from a mother's view, or maybe from the other mother's view. Every mother loves her children. Thank you. But here are some ideas that are familiar to you. They're all entitled, Somebody Said. Somebody said it takes about 6 weeks to get back to normal after you've had a baby. Somebody said it takes about 6 weeks. Somebody doesn't know that once you're a mother, normal is history. Somebody said you learn how to be a mother by instinct. Somebody never took a three-year-old shopping. There's always this little twist, isn't there? Somebody said being a mother is boring. Somebody never rode in a car driven by a teenager with a driver's permit. Somebody said if you're a, quote, good, unquote, mother, your child will turn out good. Well, somebody thinks that a child comes with directions and a guarantee. Somebody said good mothers never raise their voices. Okay, all you mothers that never raised your voices. Well, somebody never came out the back door just in time to see her child hit a golf ball through the neighbor's kitchen window. But every mother loves their child. Somebody said you don't need an education to be a mother. Somebody never helped a fourth grader with math. Somebody said you can't love the fifth child as much as you love the first. Somebody has never had more than one child. Somebody said a mother can find all the answers in her child-rearing questions in the books. Somebody never had a child stuff beans up his nose. Somebody said the hardest part of being a mother is labor and delivery. Somebody never watched her baby get on the bus for the first day and go to school. Somebody said a mother can do her job with her eyes closed and one hand behind her back. Somebody never organized 7 giggling Girl Scouts to sell cookies. Somebody said a mother can stop worrying after her child gets married. Somebody doesn't know that marriage adds a new son or daughter-in-law to a mother's heartstrings. Somebody said a mother's job is done when her last child leaves home. Somebody never has had grandchildren. Somebody said, your mother knows you love her, so you don't need to tell her. Somebody isn't a mother. Last time I spoke to you last week, I talked about Thanksgiving and giving thanks. I approached it from a different view, and I want to take the next step with you today. Indeed, Thanksgiving is important, but the next ingredient that comes on the scene after giving thanks is happiness. In all of these examples that I've mentioned to you and that many of you have lived through, somebody doesn't know happiness. Happiness is so important at the end of the day. And as I said from these illustrations, clearly somebody doesn't understand happiness. Now, the Bible makes clear statements about happiness. And it does walk along in the path that you understand of being thankful. In Proverbs 29, verse 18, the first part of that verse is well stated, probably remembered easily, memorized, and as I read to you, where there is no vision, the people perish. Yeah, we know that. We must have knowledge of where we are going. I guess with that knowledge, we can't have mercy. But the latter part of the verse is important too. It says, he that keeps the law, happy is he. When we keep the instructions of God, we're happy. Our society is filled with a lot of people who have abandoned instruction from God. Our friend Frank, just a couple doors down, sells guns because our society is falling apart. I know Frank. I've had quite a few conversations with him. I enjoy his company and discussion about various things. When I come here sometimes during the week to do a visit with a person, meeting them at the hall, I might be early, I might stay late, and go talk with Frank. And he and I have had some engaging conversations. But as you look around his shop, most of the guns he sells are not for hunting. They're people guns. They're protection guns. And there's a lot of people in our age that are not happy because they don't follow instructions. They don't know to stay out of a door when it is closed. They don't know that they shouldn't cross the fence, that the fence is there for a purpose. They don't know that a closed window should always remain closed and not broken and gone into the room. People run into mischief time after time because they don't know these ways of God. They don't keep the law. In kinship with this, we can turn to Psalm 128. Psalm 128 is one of those psalms that's called a Psalm of Degrees. There's 15 of them, and it's quite an interesting study if you want to put yourself through some exercise of studying God's Word. Now, you can get out some Bible helps and look at the Psalms of Degrees. And they're all fairly short, and this one only 6 verses, I believe. I want to read it with you. Psalm 128, we'll start with verse 1. Because it talks about the various blessings which follow those who are obedient and to God and keep His instructions. Blessed is everyone that fears the Lord and walks in His ways. So there is a way to walk. There is a way to find yourself eventually being happy. For you shall eat the labor of your hands. Happy shall that you be, and it shall be well with you. Happiness brings a certain well-being, where you feel safe within your own skin, as we say today. You're happy within your own skin. You don't have problems. You can sleep at night. You can go to bed and sleep. You don't fret and worry about many, many things. And it's important that we arrive at that station of life. The wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of your house. Your children like olive plants round about the table. Now, we've just been through Thanksgiving, and many of us have seen the family together. Our congregation is somewhat smaller today because people have traveled to be with family. In a couple of weeks, our youngest will graduate from university, and we're going to be together, gathering around a table as her family comes together in an amazing opportunity to engage her in what she's been doing and give her thanks for a job well done as she receives her awards of diploma. It'll be a very happy time, and so our olive trees will be around the table. Verse 4, behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that fears the Lord. And when you're blessed, the result will be this happiness. The Lord shall bless you out of Zion, And you shall see the good of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Now, there's many days of our life, and are they all happy? Are they all happy days? TV show. Now, some of you, not all of you by far, but some of you I've seen in your work environment, in your natural environment. And so often when I see you in that environment, you're happy. You're glad at what you're doing. There's a few people probably that have a job they hate, but it's the only thing they could get at the time. But it's so interesting to see someone when you see them in their work environment and you say, "Hi, how are you?" And you "Hey, I'm fine. How are you?" I had that experience this last week. It was a beautiful experience to see someone very happy with their work. And I've had it on other occasions too. So you shall see your children's children and peace upon Israel. When we follow the instructions of God, it can often lead to happiness. And when you find that happiness in that small piece of the pie where you're enjoying your understanding of life at this time, it can be expanded eventually to include the whole pie and every piece of it. And this is an important lesson for us to remember. In this season of giving thanks, in this time of enjoying blessings, to realize that our attitude should be happy. We can be happy. It's very important to know our state of mind and for you to, in your honesty with yourself, decide how happy you are with life. The life you live, your private life, your public life, what facade you might put on that spins as happiness is important for you to consider too. I want to take just a small sample of your mental state right now. I've got some questions for you. I want you to view these things and see how well adjusted you are in your mind. So I have four questions and then a bonus question. Now you can write down the answers, but I'm going to go through them quickly. But I want you to write your answers to these first four questions and then the bonus question. Now you can't take your time to answer. I'm going to keep going right through them. You've got to be mentally alert, and we're going to find out what your state of mind is right now. Right now, today, here. So I want you to immediately answer them, okay? First question. You're participating in a race. You overtake the second person. What position are you in? Okay, you jot it down on paper? If you answered that you're in the first position, then you are absolutely wrong. If you overtake the second person and you take his place, you are second. Second question. In that race, if you overtake the last person, then you are what? What position do you have? Answer. Now you got yours written down? If you answered that you are in second to last, then you are wrong again. How can you overtake the last person? Third question. Very tricky. It's arithmetic here. And so you do this in your mind as you're going on. And when I get to the end, you put down your number. And it's got to be done in your head only. Do not use paper or pencil as your calculator. Got to do this in your head. I guess I should have you all hold hands. So take 1,000 and add 40 to it. Now take another 1,000 and add 30. Add another 1,000. Now add 20. Now add another 1,000. Now add 10. What is the total? Any volunteers? 5,000, that's what almost everybody says. The answer is 4,100. How did that happen? You want to try it again? Okay, write it down this time. 1,000 plus 40. 1,000 plus 30. 1,000 plus 20. 1,000 plus 10. 4,100. How did that happen? I got it wrong the first time, too. We're all in good company, aren't we? Now, the actual answer, correct answer, is 4,100. Okay, up to the bonus question. We're not there yet. Fourth question. Okay, here we go. Fourth question. Mary's father has five daughters. Nana, Nini, Nini, Nanu. What is the name of the fifth daughter? Did you answer Nunu? What's the answer? Mary. Mary's father had five daughters. And then I listed four. Okay, bonus round. A mute person goes into a shop and wants to buy a toothbrush. By imitating the action of brushing his teeth, he successfully expresses himself to the shopkeeper and the purchase is made. Now, a blind man comes into the shop who wants to buy a pair of sunglasses. How does he indicate what he wants? He just has to open his mouth and ask. It's really simple, like you know. We're all fairly simple about some things. And so maybe that's something to remember in figuring out this concept of being happy. See, life has very similar tests to us, for us. They're there all the time, and sometimes we just don't get it. We think we see, but we don't see. That's because happiness is often all about perspective. It's how you look at things. I found an article by Greg Laurie off the internet doing a little research on this topic. And it was on the topic of happiness. I want to read about a page of it to you. It goes on and on, but the page is sufficient. The Greeks called the island of Cyprus the Happy Isle. They believed that because of its geographical location, perfect climate, and fertile soil, anyone who lived on Cyprus had it made in the shade. They had a word for this kind of happiness, and they called it Makarios, which means self-contained happiness. The belief that everything you needed to be happy was right there on the island. Now, we can't all move to Cyprus, but I do think it is still possible for us to experience Makarios, self-contained happiness. True happiness is independent of our circumstances. It is self-contained. Regardless of what is happening internally or externally, I believe it is possible to be a truly happy person, a genuinely blessed person. However, the idea of self-contained happiness stands in sharp contrast to our culture's versions of happiness today. The happiness defined by our culture basically depends on good things happening. If things are going reasonably well, then we are happy. If things are not going so well, then we are not happy. Some people think that if they were very wealthy, they would be happy. I'm not suggesting that you can't be wealthy and be happy, because you can be. But sometimes the things people wish for actually could be more of a curse than a blessing. Consider the story of Juan Rodriguez, a New York parking lot attendant who won $149 million in the lottery. He did this 2 days after filing for bankruptcy. His big win seemed only to bring him a whole lot of trouble. In addition to being besieged by friends and relatives who were seeking handouts, his wife, Iris, filed for a divorce 10 days after he won and demanded half the jackpot. Relatives say he was much happier when he was bankrupt. His story is proof that there are two sources of happiness in life: not getting what you want and getting it. There are some things money can buy, and there are other things it can't buy. Money can buy you a bed, but it cannot buy you a good night's sleep. It can buy you books, but it cannot buy you brains. Money can buy you a house, but it can't buy you a home. Money can buy you medicine, but it cannot buy you health. Money can buy you amusement, but it cannot buy you happiness. In the words of Paul, John, George, and Ringo, money can't buy you love. I'm dating myself, aren't I? The young ones, who are the Beatles? So when I think back with you to the comments I made about mothers, when I read Somebody Says, do you realize how much deception there is in our world about the real happiness of a mother? When you read through those things, there's a mother that's behind every one of them, and she's happy for that child. Yet the observer can see, look at them. They've got to take care of the golf ball going through the neighbor's window. They don't see what has happened in the life of that child. Think about the mental test that I gave you. Your mind deceived you, didn't it? Especially on the 5,000. It's important to see how easily we are deceived. And as a nation, we're deceived in this very time of giving thanks, because now there's a lot of people striving for happiness, and they haven't found happiness through these last few days. Our businesses are opening up sooner and sooner because the dollars are shorter and shorter. They need their fair share. And the money can buy them success, but it cannot buy them happiness. Sometimes in our lives, we need to change the perspective, how we look at things. And so maybe we can ask the question, has the Grinch stolen your happiness? Now, I was following the advice of the president on Thursday and opened up a question at the table of 30 people. Well, how are we going forward on this Obamacare? Do you really understand how to get signed up for it? Can I answer any questions for you? What's your Social Security number? Do you know how to apply for Obamacare? You know what I was met with? Yes, you do. A lot of people that wanted me to change the topic. And so I changed the topic. Perspective of where we are with that topic in our nation is not a good perspective. In our lives, if you would just change your perspective sometimes, you can be happy. Now, you can be thankful. Can you move from thankfulness to happiness? It's an important matter. Grinch does steal happiness from us so often. The next set of scriptures I want to read to you from the book of Job. And we're going to go through a few things in Job 1 that I mentioned last week when I spoke to you about thankfulness. Job 1, Job 3, and Job 5. And the intervening chapters and the rest of the text of the area are very useful. I'm going to be reading this from a God's Word translation. It reads much easier. The King James is clear, but only to those that know King James. So, since he's been around so seldom here lately, I think maybe I'll stay with the Good News translation. In Job 1, verse 20, I said, Job stood up, tore his robe in grief, shaved his head, then he fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, naked I came from my mother, and naked I will return. The Lord has given, the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. And so as that chapter 1 ends, you see a perspective of moving from thankfulness to happiness. He was praising God. Now jumping to chapter 3. I want to read the first 13 verses with you, Job 3, where we find Job cursing the day he was born. Quite a transition from that ending in chapter 1. In these chapters, Job goes through two great big tests. His wife is killed, all of his children are killed in a storm, his sheep, all of his goats are taken. All of his camels are taken. He has absolutely nothing. And so after these things being taken away, and the second time being just a little bit more than he can handle, he says in Job 3:1, after all this, Job finally opened his mouth and cursed the day he was born. And that's how well happy he was about himself. He cursed his birthday. Now this is the 30th of November. During November, I had a birthday. And it was a good day. My wife took me for breakfast. She took me for dinner. We had a good day. I liked the day. I've never had a day like that where she's bought me breakfast and dinner at the same time, the same day. You know, the breakfast is so large, I didn't need lunch. But I got some of my favorite food. Yeah, it wasn't have to be expensive to be good. And I loved that day. I was happy. The last time that you were happy in life, think about that. Here he is not happy. He's cursing his birthday. Verse 2, he said, scratch out the day I was born, and the night they said, a boy has been conceived. Get rid of that day when I was conceived. Get it off the calendar. That day, let it be pitch black. Let God above not even care about it. Let no light shine on that day. Let the darkness and long shadows claim it as their own. Let a dark cloud hang over it. Let the gloom terrify it. That night, let the blackness take it away. Let it not be included in the days of the year or be numbered among the months. 7. Let that night be empty. Let no joyful singing be heard in it. 8. Let those who curse the day, those who know how to wake up the dragon Leviathan, let those ones curse that night. He's talking about people that wail and are sad and they could wake up an alligator, I guess, Leviathan. He says, let those wailing people wail on that night. Let the stars turn dark before dawn. Let its hope for light and receive none. Let it not see the first light of dawn, because it did not shut the doors of the womb from which I came or hide my eyes from trouble. He was not a happy camper. He did not feel at all happy. So he says, why did I survive at birth in verse 11? Why didn't I die as soon as I was born and breathe my last breath when I came out of the womb? Why didn't I just fade away? Why did the knees welcome me as he was on his mother being on the birthing? Why did breasts let me nurse? And so, as you all know, when a baby is nursed, they're happy. The feeding is wonderful. The relationship is sublime. 13, instead of being alive, I would now be quietly lying down. I would now be sleeping peacefully. He says this in the sense of sleeping, in the sense of death. Why can't I just have died? Now, in my life as a pastor, I've come across people that wish they were dead. Sometimes in your life, it might have happened to you. You wondered, why did a day happen today? Why did I go through all of this? So let's turn to Job 5. Job 5. You know, verse 7, a person is born for trouble as surely as sparks fly up. Just as surely as you put a log on the fire and the sparks from the bark cause these little embers to come up, just as surely as there's going to be sparks then, there's going to be trouble in your life. It isn't a smooth walk. Things don't always go right. Our nation has recently thought of the 50th anniversary of the death of John Kennedy. And you start listening to the broadcasts about his life, and he was a sickly person. He was in that PT boat and had a wreck. He went through all kinds of trials, and yet he married the Cinderella of his life and was president. And gave us such things as the space program and challenged the nation. And yet before that, his walk was not an easy walk at all. He had a life of trouble, just as verse 7 says. Your life has trouble in it. But I would seek God's help and present my case to him. He does great things that we cannot understand, and miracles that we cannot count. He gives us rain that comes to the earth. He sends water to the fields. He places lowly people on high. He lifts those who mourn to safety. He keeps shrewd people from carrying out their plans so they cannot do anything successfully. God is always looking after you. You probably don't even know it. Every day you rise, you're vertical, not horizontal. You're on the right side of the grass. Life itself is a blessing. Your life might be torturous. You might have pain. You might have disease. You might have age. But life is much better than death. 13, he catches the wise with their own tricks. The plans of schemers prove to be hasty. In the daytime they meet darkness and grope in the sunlight as if they were at night. He saves people from their slander and the needy from the power of the mighty. Then the poor have hope while wrongdoing shuts its mouth. And then we come to the sagacity of verse 16. Verse 17, behold, happy is the man whom God corrects. Therefore, don't despise the chastening of the Almighty. It's happy to have direction given to you in life. While we walk the paths of life, sometimes extremely rocky, we must always remember what our perspective should be. What is our view? Do we have an understanding that there is a supplier, with a capital S, giving us what we need? Sometimes it is very frugal, very little. But all that we have, we can be thankful for. I would think that everyone in the room can read and write. You know how many people cannot do that on the face of this earth? It's amazing when you start traveling around the ages of the world and see the different people from different ages and what they can and cannot do. Being happy is all about your perspective. If you see what is in your life, Joy and I have been able and blessed for a short while to travel. And we've been in Jamaica. We've been in St. Lucia. Beautiful paradises to consider, to visit. Some even are able to retire there. But this last week, we've come across information from our member friends in Jamaica that in two different cases, very ugly things happened. One young person writes about her girlfriend who died. She was murdered. One of our members that attends with us in one of the other towns was mugged. Now, you might be mugged sometime, but at least you have life. You look at the people living in these areas in their little places of habitat, and they might have a roof, but they may not have anything under the roof but themselves. Joy and Marvette, one of her lady friends there in the island of Jamaica, visited a young girl, I think she was 14, in a hospital. A very sad situation. Without going into all the details, we'll simply say that her father decided she wasn't worth having, so he attacked her with a machete. Raped her and attacked her with a machete. The neighbors heard about it, called the cops, and he was killed. And he fell on her. The machete had cut her throat, so she could not speak. But the young girl smiled when she saw these two ladies come to visit and wrote them notes back and forth. None of us have been in that circumstance, and I hope it never happens to any of us. But can you understand happiness, at least of having life, in such a desperate situation? When I was visiting in West Virginia some decades ago, there was a family that was extremely poor. They had $12 a week. Lived in a little house, no heat. And all they could afford was pancakes once a day. They couldn't afford anything to put on the pancakes, so they put flavored oil, flavored with coffee. That's how they ate their one meal a day. Now, I know some of us don't have enough, but I hope all of us are able to live on at least one meal a day. And I hope it's a little better than pancakes with oil that's flavored with coffee. Yet they were happy. The 12-year-old girl really wanted to go on in life. She was interested in education. I can remember that so clearly. Perspective. At least she had something. For some time, Joy and I ran some businesses, and we advised and required that our employees leave their troubles at the door. And when they signed the contract and the requirements that we had of them when they were being employed, it was very clear. When you come in here, the people that we're looking after don't have it as good as you do. And so they don't need further troubles in their life. Leave your troubles at the door. Your job is to take care of these people and do the best you can, make sure they're loved and cared for, to make sure they're happy. I think in many places of work, it's just common sense. Leave your troubles at the door. Unfortunately, it's becoming uncommon sense. People take their troubles all over, and it's all over the internet. We can't seem to put a perspective on where we are in life and what's going on. The perspective now includes all of our trauma at your work, when you do your job. Can you leave your troubles at the door? Or do you have some that bring their troubles to work? Do you bring your troubles to work? It's very important, if you want to be happy, that you understand what thankfulness is and that you have a perspective that you're very happy about what you have, no matter how much or how little it be. That's the lesson from Job. See, those inside our care homes had it worse, had significant troubles, but we were to take care of them and love them. So in conclusion, just think about happiness. Make this a little manufacturing house of happiness when you come into the service. Leave your troubles on the other side of that door. Come in here and make somebody else happy. And when you come in to do that, and it becomes something you can do, practice it in other places in your life. Have a perspective. There's always a wrinkle. There's always something that's not right. They're trying to serve you something you don't like or you shouldn't eat. They're using language you don't like. There's all kinds of things to be upset about. They kick the dog, they throw the cat, they watch terrible things. There's always something wrong in life. But having life itself is wonderful. Don't worry, be happy.